This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao-Yik. Colorectal cancer is the second most common cancer among Malaysians and is diagnosed at a relatively late stage compared to other developed Asian countries. Therefore, there is tremendous potential for the development of new biomarker discoveries and alternative therapies in the diagnosis and treatment of colorectal cancer. Joining me in the studio today is Dr. Un Chen In, a researcher in medical oncology from the Institute for Research in Molecular Medicine, University Science Malaysia. She is here to discuss the research by her team to develop a new anti-cancer agent for colorectal cancer. Good afternoon, Dr. Un. How are you today?
Good afternoon. Very well, thank you.
Dr. Un, perhaps we can just start with your research in cancer. What got you interested in this area of research?
When I was young, I've always been interested in medicine, biology, the human anatomy. And I was quite sure I wanted to become a medical doctor. But then growing up in a sort of a conservative family, my mom would tell me that if you were to pursue medicine, you'd probably end up getting married to the hospital and you would not have time for a family. And for some reason, I'm somehow maneuvered towards lecturing, in which growing up she has always told me that when you go into lecturing and doing research, you would actually have more flexibility for your family and for your own life, to have a life, just as to say that. So after I finished my degree in University Kebangsaan, Malaysia, I actually specialized in plant biotechnology. I decided that I wanted to switch back to the human side of research, so medicine. I went for attachment at hospitals in Penang, the different types of cancer hospitals, private hospitals, general hospitals, just to be exposed to the medical side, what the patients experience in general, and to see how I can actually do something to cater to the needs of therapeutics. So I think that is how I got into this research, because when I was attached to the cancer hospitals, I got to see the pain that the patients felt, the pain that they went through, the pain that the family actually went through for these patients. And it actually got to me, and I was very sure that at some point I want to try to find a cure for cancer.
That's very, very ambitious. What areas of cancer research have you focused on before this?
So during my PhD, I was trained in medical oncology, focusing on angiogenesis, which is the formation of blood vessels. Many people know that to cure cancer, they think that it's sufficient to just kill the cancer cells, but many do not know that there are other factors that are actually fueling the tumor growth, and we call that the tumor microenvironment. So these are actually the cells, the different cell types within the microenvironment of the cancer that function to support the tumor growth and to also elicit cytokines and growth factors to support the tumor. So one of the cell types, they are known as the endothelial cells, and the endothelial cells are the cells that line up our blood vessels. So blood vessels are needed to actually supply nutrients and oxygen to the tumor so that they will grow.
Okay, and we will be going more into detail in one specific area of tumor of angiogenesis later on,
okay,
which is the sirtuins that you've been working on. But going back to colorectal cancer, why, as I mentioned earlier, it's diagnosed at a relatively late stage in Malaysia. Why is this so?
Well, I think colorectal cancer, actually, we do have screening programs in the hospitals. I think it's just the level of awareness that is lacking in Malaysia, because I work together with the Magna National Cancer Council, and I realize that there are still communities who actually believe that cancer is a result of bad luck, God's will, and these sort of things, and they are not aware about what actually causes cancer. They don't really know. So I think it's the level of awareness in the first place, and second place, perhaps they are not aware of the screening programs that the government run in the hospital. So this might actually be one of the contributing factors to why they are diagnosed quite late.
With colorectal cancer, what is the screening aimed at detecting?
Usually they'll be screening the stools from the patients or just from people who are suspicious that they might have colon cancer. You know, when you start to have symptoms like having irregular bowel or the shape of your stool is different, you know, and your habits of going to the toilet has changed, or maybe you pass out pus or blood. So that is one of the indications. Then you'll be sent for screening at a hospital. So they'll be looking at markers, or sometimes you can even take the blood test to look for markers to indicate whether there's a tumor marker for colon cancer that is being upregulated or not. But this is not 100% indicative that you do have that disease if you see an increase in that level, because it could be something else that could also contribute to the increase of the marker expression. So I think the next step is to do colonoscopy or to go to the doctor, and they will be able to do some biopsies if there are any polyps that are growing, and follow up from there.
You mentioned markers, and of course we know that in the case of a cancer such as prostate cancer, you look for markers like PSA, the prostate-specific antigen. But just for the benefit of our listeners, can you explain actually what are biomarkers and how do they tell us that there is a risk of cancer there?
So biomarkers are actually molecules that are highly expressed by the tumors, whether they're secreted into the bloodstream or on the tumor surface. So for different cancers, there are different markers. So taking breast cancer, for example, because it's more well-known, there are many different types of breast cancers. As we know, we have triple negative, we have HER2 positive breast cancer, ER positive breast cancer. So when the biopsies are taken, what the doctors do, they will send the biopsies to the pathologist, to the pathology lab in the first place, and they will do some staining for markers of HER2, let's say. So it's for an increased expression of HER2. That is indicative of breast cancer aggressiveness. So the pathologist will also be in the picture to have a look at the tumor sections and to score the tumors for the expression of these markers. And once positive, the doctors can actually decide on what type of drug to give to the patient. So if the patient is HER2 positive for breast cancer, then the doctor will give Herceptin. But if the patient is HER2 negative, there is no point giving HER2 targeting therapy to the patient. So that is one of the basis of molecular targeted therapy.
Is molecular targeted therapy being used currently for colorectal cancer?
Yes, definitely, because the bowel cancer is actually one of the quite highly angiogenic tumors. So in the clinics, doctors are actually using bevacizumab, which is an anti-angiogenic therapy, to sequester the growth factors that are involved to fill the tumor growth by cutting down the angiogenic vessels so that the tumors will shrink.
Would you say that targeted therapy is the mainstay of treatment for colorectal cancer currently?
Well, I would say that chemotherapy is also widely used. However, chemotherapy has its own drawbacks. For example, it targets all dividing cells. So it can be the intestinal lining, your bone marrow, your hair. So patients undergoing chemotherapy actually subject themselves to a big burden on the immune system, because the chemotherapy is toxic. It's not specific. But for molecular targeted therapy, it is quite specific because it's only targeting molecules that are highly expressed in a particular tumor. So it doesn't need to be even tumor specific. because now the treatment and the therapy is going towards a non-tumor specific but more of a marker specific cancer.
Would the prognosis for a patient using targeted therapy be better than compared to chemotherapy?
Well, research has shown that when you combine treatment with targeted therapy and chemotherapy, the therapeutic outcome is usually better because a lot of patients develop resistance to chemotherapy. So there are two types of resistance. One is the intrinsic resistance. That means that the patient genetically is resistant to the treatment. The other one is the patient is in the first place responsive to treatment and then suddenly non-responsive due to the cell populations having mutated to adapt to the treatment. So what the current therapeutic regime does is to combine treatments so that together the targeted therapy can help sensitize the cancer to chemotherapy.
I've been speaking to Dr. Un Chen-in, a researcher in medical oncology from the Institute for Research in Molecular Medicine, University Science Malaysia, about developing a novel sirtuin inhibitor for the treatment of colorectal cancer. That's a completely new word for me. So when we come back, we'll find out more about this particular anti-cancer agent after the break on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to the show. In the studio today with me is Dr. Un Chen-in, a researcher in medical oncology from the Institute for Research in Molecular Medicine, University Science Malaysia. Just before the break, she was talking about the advantages of targeted therapy and how combining it with standard chemotherapy for colorectal cancer can improve treatment outcomes. Dr. Un, you're working on developing an inhibitor for a compound called sirtuins. As I said before the break, this is a completely new word. Perhaps you can explain, first of all, what are sirtuins?
So sirtuins are enzymes that are implicated in many metabolic diseases, for instance, neurodegenerative diseases, cardiovascular diseases, and of course, cancer. Sirtuins first came into the picture about 20 years ago due to this explosion and the fountain of youth. They call it the molecule that is so potent to reverse aging, and that is called sirtuin-1. So it came about due to this incidence called the French paradox, whereby they noticed that French people having a diet of, high-fat diet, but they have very low risk of cardiovascular diseases. Mm. And they found that this is due to the very high intake of wine daily. And then what is in the wine? It's actually wine is made from red grapes, right? So grapes, red grapes, there is this compound called resveratrol, which is an activator of sirtuin-1, and this has been researched to actually be the molecule that is involved in, well, they believe that it is a molecule that is causing the reversing of aging. Mm-hmm. And of course, it became a very big hype in the market. Mm-hmm. So since then, the pharmaceutical industries decided to look into more sirtuin modulators, be it an activator or an inhibitor. So sirtuin is a very, very new word, mm-hmm. just mainly because it's just been out discovered 20 years ago for use in the pharmaceutical industry.
And what about its role in the development of cancer?
Well, the funny thing about sirtuin is that it's not clear-cut. So it's going to be very confusing for laymen, but it actually has been found to be able to promote cancer, or it can also inhibit cancer growth. But this is the funny thing about this molecule, because it very much depends on the tumor microenvironment, on the grade of the tumor, the stage of development, the mutation profile of the cancer, or even the tissue of origin where the cancer arises from. So I can't really answer whether sirtuin is really promoting cancer or inhibiting cancer. But as far as I know, the compound that we have can inhibit sirtuin 1 and sirtuin 2, which are the homologs of sirtuins. And so far in our hands, when we put them in mice, the mice showed regression in colorectal tumor growth. However, we've also tested other sirtuin inhibitors, commercial sirtuin inhibitor, and we found that it actually promoted tumor growth in vivo, and that is for pancreatic cancer, so it's a different type of cancer.
So the same type of sirtuin can switch and play different roles in different individuals. Do I have that right?
Well, I would say that because the molecular mechanism is so complex in cancer, one pathway is always interacting with another pathway. Sirtuin is an epigenetic regulator, which means that it is controlling downstream gene expression, whether it gets activated or not. And the levels of sirtuin expression is also important. The same goes to the level of inhibition or maybe how potent a sirtuin inhibitor is. All this plays a role to determine the outcome of the therapy. Also, we must not forget the tumor microenvironment plays a very important role. So there have been many times in my research, well, actually twice, in both my research, I found that in vitro, in the cells, the compound is actually a particular compound inhibiting a certain pathway is actually killing cancer cells. But once we administer the compounds into animals, it is doing the exact opposite thing. And this is due to the crosstalk, the communication between the cancer cells and the cancer cells and the microenvironment.
So we are looking at using that specific inhibitor compound in a very, very individualized approach.
Yes, correct. Yeah. So like I said, molecular targeted therapy is not for everyone. It's only for those patients who have tumors expressing high levels of that particular target. So for my instance, for my inhibitor would only, well, I would expect it to only work on tumors with high expression of sirtuins. So for colon cancer, as we have done in our in vitro tests, normal colon cells do not express sirtuins. Therefore, my compound has minimal toxicity effect on normal cells, which means they do not kill normal cells, but they kill the colon cancer cells because colon cancer cells express sirtuins at a very high level.
Is there a genetic link to who would express higher levels of sirtuin?
So far, there is no data available and no link as far as I'm concerned. I think it is a field that is still very hot to be pursued, and many people are now looking at this field of research. So I think we can foresee many more publications coming up in the next years on sirtuins, as there are 7 sirtuin homologs even, and so much.
7, I see. Okay.
So still a lot to be uncovered.
So going to your research then, which types of sirtuins does your compound target?
We've tested the compound against SIRT1 and SIRT2 activity, SIRT1 and SIRT2. We found that the compound can inhibit SIRT1 and SIRT2 activities very well. We have not tested against SIRT3 to SIRT7 purely because of limitations in the commercial kits that are available because our compound fluoresces. So it's just technical issues that we have to deal with.
But are all the types of sirtuins, 1 to 7, are they all present in all cancers?
No, not necessarily. So even the subcellular localization are different. Like, you know, within a cell, you have the mitochondria, you have the nucleus, you have the cytoplasm. So these sirtuins are expressed in different parts of the cells even. And this may be indicative of the different roles and different biological functions.
It's
getting quite
You're right. It's really going into the cellular level.
Yes.
Then how do you where do you even begin to develop the compound that inhibits the activity of the sirtuin?
So I think all this happened out of sheer luck to stumble upon a compound that works so well, right? It all started from the work of a PhD student. He's a medicinal chemist, and he knows that the area of sirtuin research is booming. So he just decided to alter some analogs of benzimidazole, and he came up with this compound, actually a library of compounds, and we tested them for sirtuin inhibitory activities. And then we found that half of the compounds actually can inhibit sirtuins, and then we tested further in cancer cell lines, and then furthermore. And then we just came up with one lead compound, and that is the compound that we're working on.
How long did that process take? From what you said, the lucky finding, to narrowing down to this compound now?
Well, I must say that we've been on this for 6 years already.
Okay.
So it's quite a journey, but to get to clinical trials and so on, it would still need another 7 years at least.
What stage is your research at now?
We are now at the preclinical level to look at the effect in animals, so particularly in mice, to see if they're toxic, to see how they affect metabolism, to see how they affect tumor growth in mice.
So as you said earlier, translating it from in vitro to an actual organic environment can be very different, right? They
yes.
act very differently. So what have your observations been so far?
So observations, well, thankfully, they are giving me quite promising results so far. In vitro, they're killing the cancer cells, and in vivo, they're doing the same. So in a way, I'm quite pleased to see that because, like I've mentioned, dealing with other pathway inhibitors, I've seen the exact opposite. And when that happens, you need to elucidate the mechanism that's causing the different treatment outcomes in vitro and in vivo. So for our case, so far, it is doing what I expect it to do.
But is there a possibility that this could again be different when you are doing clinical?
Yes, I must say, because every patient is different. They have different genetic profile. They may respond differently. And the immune system might also be able to tolerate this drug or not. We don't know.
Okay, all right. What is the potential of sirtuin inhibitors in the treatment of other cancers besides colorectal?
Well, I must say that from existing literature and from what I know, so far no sirtuin inhibitors are being used at the clinics. So there's one sirtuin inhibitor, X527, that is currently being tested in clinical trials, but it's not for cancer. However, it's for Huntington's disease.
All right.
So a lot still has to be done in order to be sure that this can definitely be a very good drug candidate for colon cancer.
Dr. Un, one interesting aspect of your research is that you are starting to use AI or artificial intelligence to improve, you know, the progress of your research. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Okay, as we are gearing up for Industry 4.0, where big data is abundant, this is actually the next step in drug discovery and development, because drug discovery itself is a very costly business. So if we can incorporate artificial intelligence or machine learning in drug discovery, it could potentially save a lot of money. It is less laborious and it's actually more accurate. In this AI business, it is postulated that within the next 10 years, drug discovery will then start from computer to bench to clinics. But now everything is from bench to clinic. So a lot of discovery made in the lab, they are actually very costly. Because out of thousands of compounds or drugs that are tested in the lab, maybe at the end of the day, only one can be used. But when you use AI to predict the targets or predict whether the compound or the drugs can use or not, or predict whether it can work in synergy with chemotherapy, and then you streamline down to maybe a few drug candidates, and then from then on, you work, you bring it to the bench, and then you start working on it. I think that would be actually more efficient.
So how will you be using AI on your research in the sirtuin inhibitor?
So at the moment, we are trying to collect data from clinical trials, from the literature, from our lab experiments. And all this data that we can find, we are going to feed the machine. And we call it the neural network, so they function like human brains, just that whatever that human needs to accomplish in a year, the machine can actually accomplish in perhaps a few hours to a few weeks. So this is how advanced the technology is. So it's actually more rapid, and hopefully by doing that, I'll be able to validate the findings in the lab, and if it is true, this can be a proof of concept for later future studies where I do not need to go through bench work in order to predict the combination therapeutic outcome of my drug, but just use AI to see how my drug can actually treat cancer or different types of cancer as well in combination with other drugs.
So what is your process after this? I mean, you said that it would still be a pretty long road
yes.
to come. What are the plans that you've laid out?
So at the moment, we are testing the compound in vivo to look at the effect on toxicity, to see how it is actually metabolized, and to see if there's any metabolic toxicity. To look at the molecular toxicity level, because sometimes you don't see the toxicity effect, but it is regulating some genes that cannot be seen by eyes.
And the next step, I suppose, then would be looking into the viability for clinical trials?
Yes, but that would be quite some time to go, because I would need to work together with the pharma industries because it's quite an expensive business.
I'm sure, yes.
Yes.
Are you working on any other research apart from the sirtuin inhibitor?
Well, the sirtuin inhibitor is actually my pet project, but I'm also working on side projects, but they're still at the fundamental research, mainly to look at angiogenesis, you know, inhibition of the blood vessels, and to see the mechanisms and to understand the different molecules that are involved. So still the very, very fundamental research.
But maybe a final word. Really, we're looking at a new frontier in the treatment of cancer. For so long, people have been afraid of chemotherapy because it just targets everything.
Yes.
So what would be your final message about the future of targeted individualized therapy in cancer treatment?
Well, personalized medicine is the term that is used for this. It is actually a treatment that is specially targeted for patients with very specific genetic profile that can be that the doctors know that will respond to the treatment. So when you have a population of patients coming in, the patients will be screened either by blood or tumor biopsies to see the expression of certain markers, and then these patients will be segregated for different types of treatments with inhibitors or drugs that target a specific molecule.
Okay, so we hope that that will be the future as cancer becomes more prevalent in our society.
Yes.
We must look for new ways to target the tumor cells.
Correct.
Thank you very much. I've been speaking to Dr. Un Chun In, a researcher in medical oncology from the Institute for Research in Molecular Medicine, University Science Malaysia, on her team's research into sirtuin inhibitors, which could be a potential new anti-cancer agent on the horizon. If you missed any part of the show, you can download the podcast on our BFM app. You've been listening to Health and Living on the Bigger Picture BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.